The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Good afternoon, everybody, and it's great to be back with you on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are streaming live around the world on our website, that's focusonfemales.com, and of course we're coming to you from West Central Florida in Tampa from the studios of WGUL 860 AM. Last week we tackled menopause. One quick tip that may be of some help to some of you ladies out there with hot flashes that came out of last week's clinic is the use of tofu, soybeans, soy milk, and some people, at least anecdotally, last week's expert, Dr. Karen Bray, gynecologist, suggested to try it. I just learned a few minutes ago from this week's expert, who's a nutrition expert, that although anecdotally it may have helped many people, in studies performed thus far, there has not been demonstrated a benefit. So ultimately, you may want to try it and see if it works for you. It's funny, but after the show last week, actually some guys came up to me and said, well, now I know why my wife's taking soy supplements, and it works. Now, for new listeners, a brief introduction. The Focus on Females Education Foundation is bringing education programs to the public. Its mission is to make each and every one of you an expert on your own personal medical problems, and it does this through these weekly radio programs and an annual healthcare symposium. The purpose, again, is to, through making you an expert on your medical problems, you can better partner with your existing physician to have more effective office visits, faster results, and reduce the economic burden of avoidable health and medical and emergency care. One announcement. In that regard, our upcoming fourth annual symposium is March the 21st. That's March 21st of 2009 at the Tampa Convention Center. You won't want to miss this. Jot it down. Make a note of it. It's a free event, and you'll have a great time as well as learning about how to manage your personal health. One last announcement. There is a fundraiser coming up on November the 8th. For the Focus on Females Education Foundation. This is how we raise the funds to enable us to continue these free events and outreach to help you with your own health and medical problems. The chairperson for That fundraiser is Kit Stewart of Kit's Well Healed and Well Dressed. She, as well as a group of ladies called the Fashionistas, are putting on a fundraiser for the foundation. It's a fashion show fundraiser. In addition, the incomparable Anita Pointer of the Pointer Sisters will be entertaining. That's Saturday, November the 8th in Hyde Park, historic Hyde Park in Tampa. You can find out more information by calling Kit 250-1253. Tickets are limited, so please call and reserve your seats now. In addition to the entertainment, also included is dinner and an unbelievable fashion show, which I'm told Kit's bringing in fashions from around the world for that. Now, for today's clinic, we're tackling nutrition and cancer prevention. This is always a hot topic at our annual symposium with hundreds of people attending this particular seminar, and we're pleased to have with us today Catherine Allen from Moffitt Cancer Center, who's been with us at the annual symposium as well, guiding us with information about how to manage our nutrition. Kathy is the manager of the Department of Nutrition at the Moffitt Cancer Center in Tampa. She has practiced in the field of dietetics for approximately 23 years, has spent 15 of those years serving Moffitt, and has extensive experience in the nutrition care of cancer patients, cancer prevention, and wellness. Kathy holds a Bachelor's of Science in Dietetics, a Master's degree in Adult Education, is a registered dietitian, and board certified as a specialist in oncology. Only one of two in the state of Florida with that distinction. Kathy, it's great to have you here with us today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Well, this is such a wonderful area now with everybody more and more interested in taking control of their own personal well-being, that there are many questions that I personally have, as well as I'm sure we'll hear from callers today, about nutrition and cancer prevention. I guess the first one, just to open things up, is can nutrition actually help prevent cancer, good nutrition prevent you from developing cancer?
Well, that's a very good question to start with, Steve, because studies have shown consistently that changing our lifestyles, one of those being changing dietary habits, can reduce cancer risk or cancer occurrence by up to 45%.
Wow, that's obviously very significant. Mm-hmm. Now, tell me how you interface that reduced risk with the genetic factor.
Well, we know that genetics plays a role in cancer development, and we also know the immune function plays a role in cancer development and progression. We also know that our bodies are designed to try to fight off disease, cancer being one of those, and anything we can do to assist with that and help our body to heal itself as we're confronted with potential carcinogens can possibly balance out the predisposition we have to developing cancer. So genetics definitely plays a big role. There are some cancers that are more environmentally related, and we know we can have some control over our environment as well as our lifestyle, and those types of cancers are the ones that can be prevented, and those are really the most common types of cancers. Some of those are breast cancer, prostate cancer, skin cancer, head and neck cancer.
How is breast cancer impacted by environment?
Well, we know that part of our environment has to do, or our, let's say if we consider lifestyle as part of our environment, we know that obesity or having excess body fat increases the risk for breast cancer, particularly postmenopausal breast cancer. We know now that increased physical activity can reduce the risk of breast cancer. So those are what I'm referring to when I refer to environmental factors. Also what we eat. It has been shown also consistently that people who have a high intake of fruits and vegetables have a reduced incidence or reduced risk of many different types of cancers, breast cancer being one of those.
Now, they used to say, and I can't remember the exact statistics, but they used to say, for example, for smokers, if they stop smoking, then it would reduce the risk of developing lung cancer in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the impact of altering your nutrition or what you eat. Let's say you're 60 years old and you had been a meat and potatoes person since your 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Is changing your nutrition at that later, well, at that middle mm-hmm. age in life, or beyond for that matter, helpful in reducing your subsequent risk to develop cancer the rest of your life?
Well, I believe that at any point, changing our lifestyle for the better, improving lifestyle, can have a positive impact on health and disease prevention. We know that reducing abdominal fat in a person who is overweight can improve health status or reduce disease risk. We also know, if we look at the physiology or the biochemistry of the way cancer develops and progresses, that there are certain chemicals that are naturally found in fruits and vegetables called phytochemicals that can help to keep the DNA from replicating abnormally. So, and I think most of us have heard of antioxidants. Antioxidants help to reduce the number of free radicals that have a harmful effect on our body cells. So I think at any stage of life, if we adopt a healthier lifestyle and healthier eating habits, we can potentially reduce the risk. And I can tell you that it won't hurt. So anything that can potentially help and doesn't harm seems the wisest thing for anyone to do.
Okay, we have a question from Eve from Tampa. Let's see if we can get the question in before the break and then respond after the break. Eve, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. You're with Steve Maskin. Do you have a question for our expert today,
yes.
Kathy Allen?
Yes, I do. I was wondering, my husband and I were reading recently something about pancreatic cancer, and is it true that if you eat a certain amount of red meat every day, that it increases your chances of pancreatic cancer? I think it was something like 50%. And if so, what's a safe level to consume?
Okay, we can actually begin a response to that question. Kathy?
Actually, recent evidence shows that reducing red meat to 18 ounces per week can help to reduce the risk of colon cancer. The connection between that and pancreatic cancer wasn't as strong. However, being overweight or having a very high BMI increases the risk for pancreatic cancer, along with high alcohol intake.
Okay. I have one other question. What are the safe sugar substitutes, if there are any out there?
Any of the sugar substitutes are safe in terms of cancer. There is no evidence that any of the sugar substitutes increase cancer risk.
Well, this is great information. I'm glad that someone started this.
Well, thank you very much, Eve. And you may want to – I have a follow-up question, Kathy. You talked about red meat mm-hmm. and the risk for colon cancer, possible mm-hmm. by extension pancreatic cancer. How about processed foods? I guess some red meat falls in that category. Mm-hmm. Can you make a general statement about processed foods and the risk for cancer?
There is a connection between processed meats, heavily processed meats, like salami, hot dogs, several different luncheon meats that are heavily processed. There is a connection between that and colon cancer risk as well.
Is there an additional or a synergistic a risk on top of the baseline risk of red meat when it's processed?
That didn't come to bear in the research studies that were reviewed. However, I think that all of the factors, when we talk about diet, many different factors do have a synergistic effect. So that could potentially have a combined effect.
Excellent. Eve, did that answer your questions?
It does. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. Okay. Well, we're going to be back with more great information on nutrition and cancer prevention. This is Steve Maskin, Focus on Females, Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Focus on Females. This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. We are learning great information today from Catherine Allen, who comes to us from Moffitt Cancer Center, where she is the manager of the Department of Nutrition. Catherine, let me ask you about sugar. What's the relationship between sugar and cancer? Does sugar or can sugar feed cancer?
That's a very good question, one that I'm asked quite often. Sugar is a carbohydrate. Our bodies use carbohydrates as fuel. We need to have them. Any type of sugar or carbohydrate gets broken down into glucose, which is our primary energy source. Yes, cancer cells do use sugar, but the rest of our cells do as well. So the only way to starve the cancer cells from sugar is by starving the body, and we definitely don't want to do that. So sugar doesn't feed cancer cells any more than any other type of carbohydrate. However, for overall health, it's probably a good idea to try to eat foods that have a lower sugar content because sugar does provide sweetness. It does provide calories, but the sugar that we find in the sugar bowl, which has been processed, doesn't provide a whole lot of other nutrients that could be cancer-fighting nutrients, such as the sugar you find in fruits. You know, not only do you get the sugar, but you also get the fiber and the vitamins, minerals, and the phytochemicals that can help to fight cancer. So it's better to get your sugar through food.
Well, that's a great tip. How about and the sugar perhaps you've been referring to as a glucose, but mm-hmm. How about fructose or some of the other, like if you pick up a health shake or other snack foods, they often may say the glucose equivalent, if I'm not incorrect here, the glucose equivalent or the sugar equivalent, maybe zero, but there's a different sugar in there, a fructose mm-hmm. or some other mm-hmm. type of sweetener. that's not artificial.
Mm-hmm.
Would you make the same comment about those other sugars?
Yes, really all sugars are created equal. However, when we look at labeling laws, the requirement is to indicate how much sucrose is a product. And a manufacturer can call a product sugar-free as long as sucrose isn't one of the sugars. Sucrose is made up of glucose and fructose. So, and fructose is found in fruits along with sucrose. So all three of those sugars are found in fruits, and they're also found in sucrose, which is the kind you have in your sugar bowl. So sugar is sugar. It really makes no difference. They're all the same number of calories, and they all pretty much perform the same function in our bodies.
Well, online now is Bruce from Pennsylvania,
who
is calling. He's been listening to our streaming online radio program, has a question for you. Bruce, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, and you deserve an award because this is our third week with the show, and you're the first male, so congratulations, and I can't wait. I'm eagerly waiting your question.
Well, thanks a lot. My question for Catherine is, I know organic seems to be better for you, organic foods. I have seen some products that say they're organic processed as opposed to just regular processed food. Is organic processed, is that better for you?
That's a very good question. Many people ask, are organic foods better? If organic can mean a number of different things. Organic can mean the way the process a farmer uses to grow the food.
Okay.
And the politics of organics is really the more critical issue than the nutrition content of organic food. Whether it's grown organically or not, they pretty much have the same nutritional content, although some studies recently have found that those grown organically are somewhat richer in nutrients.
Okay.
But if we look at the politics of organics, the heavy use of pesticides on foods that are conventionally grown may have a more harmful effect on the environment. Now, if we looked at processed foods that are labeled as organic, I would say that that's probably a manufacturer's attempt to get you to buy the product. If you were to make an effort to buy organic, you'd be better off choosing the produce that's grown organically versus the processed foods.
All right. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks
You're
a
welcome.
Lot.
Okay. Kathy, let's make this even more simpler or simplify this.
Mm-hmm.
Would you define organic food, organically grown food?
Organically grown food means that it is supposed to have been grown without the use of chemical pesticides. And it also means that the farmer who grows the organic food is using the soil in the best possible way to retain the nutrients. So they're not over farming a piece of land, and they're using a rotation process that really makes the most use of the soil, the best use of the soil.
Okay. Now, so would you say, and you may have answered this, does a person need to eat all organic to reduce cancer risk? And what do you look for in the label?
Well, no. To answer your first question, no. A person would not have to eat all organic in order to reduce cancer risk. And in fact, it's interesting because when we look at studies that have been done closely evaluating food and its relationship to cancer risk, what we see consistently is that people who eat a lot of fruits and vegetables have a reduced risk of cancer, and there is no increase in risk or even a probable increase in risk with any fresh fruits or vegetables. So many people say, well, isn't there a risk of consuming pesticides on fruits and vegetables? Well, that has not been seen in the research studies.
And we'll come back to this and many more questions on nutrition and cancer prevention. I'm Steve Maskin. You're listening to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
studio lines are open. So get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back once again. This is Steve Maskin, Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling nutrition and cancer prevention. And from Tampa, we have Jenna calling with a question. Jenna, welcome to the Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Thank you. First of all, thanks for taking my call, and this is a great program that you have.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My question is, I have a friend of mine that just started juicing, and I'm actually wondering if there are any health benefits in the prevention of cancer that you would say in juicing.
Now, I was just saying, can you define what you mean by juicing? Because juicing, that term is used in a few different ways these days.
Well, you know, just a juicing machine. So you put carrots and...
Very good.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Well, Jenna, thanks for calling. I think that if you were drinking the juice in place of, let's say, drinking soft drinks, there's definitely some benefit there. However, I would much prefer to see people eating the whole fruit or vegetable because you have the fiber and possibly some other micronutrients that could potentially be lost in the juicing process.
Okay, that's interesting.
Thank you. Now, Kathy, mm-hmm. Or would you have that opinion on all vegetables that are juiced? Is that just a generalization you think is fairly consistent across the board?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How about things like V8? Is that which combines a number of different vegetables? Do you think that is that a good source of nutrients, or would you prefer people get their vegetable nutrients from those vegetables fresh?
Well, I think it's better to get them from the fresh food. If you're drinking V8 in place of a Coke, it's a great idea. But if you're drinking V8 instead of eating tomatoes and other vegetables, one problem that we have in the U.S. is people are having a hard time controlling their weight. And eating the whole food also gives you more a sense of fullness, which you're getting full from a food that is high in volume but low in calories. And that's the best way to control weight. And you also have the added benefit of the fiber, which can reduce the risk of cancer, among other diseases.
Excellent. Janet, if you're still on the line, do you have a follow-up question?
No, that's all for today.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Now tell me, can dietary supplements interfere with cancer therapies?
Actually, there's some recent evidence that shows that taking supplements that have a high content of antioxidants can actually interfere with some cancer therapies. So we do advise against taking high-dose dietary supplements, including vitamins and minerals, during cancer therapy.
So is it fair to say also in an age where people are looking to herbals and other types of alternative medicines that if these individuals are being treated for cancer, they need to bring a list of every single thing they take to their physician so that they can properly evaluate whether or not these things need these herbals and other types of supplements that are not FDA controlled mm-hmm. could be evaluated as they go through the cancer therapy.
Most definitely. In fact, anything that you might be taking, whether it's over the counter or not, if you're taking it for its therapeutic effect or medicinal effect, you can consider it a medicine. And when you go to see your doctor or other healthcare professional and they ask what types of medications are you taking, you should always report on the over-the-counter products that you might be taking, including herbals, vitamins, or minerals.
Now, the last time I looked at this, there's really been not a lot of scientifically performed double-blind randomized studies when it comes to herbals and other types of therapies like this. And I know that some of these can have significant effects on blood clotting and other types of mm-hmm. metabolic processes. So it is essential, as Kathy just stated, it's essential that your doctors even if they're not, even if you're not being evaluated or treated for cancer, really all the doctors should know what you're taking. So that's an excellent point. Tell me about canned and frozen vegetables and compare them to fresh vegetables.
Well, the fresher the better. Anything that is consumed as close as possible to the time it was picked has more nutrients. The next best choice would be frozen, and then last would be canned, because canned vegetables, in order to kill the bacteria that may be present, are always processed at a very high temperature, which can kill some of the vitamins. And the minerals stay intact, but mostly we're talking about vitamins. Some exceptions would be foods like beans, like dried beans that you might buy dried but are canned, like black beans or garbanzo beans. Those tend to retain their nutritive value. But other vegetables like green beans, mostly the other green vegetables, lose some of their nutrition or some of their quality in the canning process.
So a common, unpopular, I think, diet out west is a raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think there are raw food bars that you can go to and just, you know, sit and enjoy some raw food. Is this a good way to go? Is this pose concerns for you? What do you think?
Well, it depends on what it is that you're consuming raw. The animal products could be high in bacteria if they're consumed raw. We definitely advise against eating raw eggs because they can contain salmonella. There's nothing wrong with eating raw fruits and vegetables as long as they're rinsed. But I don't see, and if that's what you prefer, I would say by all means, eat them raw, the fruits and vegetables and other non-animal products. Definitely would advise against drinking raw milk. Milk is pasteurized for a reason. It kills the pathogens or the bacteria that can make you sick. So I don't see a whole lot of benefit, but if you prefer your fruits and vegetables raw, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Okay. And sushi, a lot of people eat sushi. What is your personal view on that?
Well, I think if sushi is handled properly, it can be very safe. I myself enjoy sushi and feel that it's worth the potential risk, but there is some risk involved. Anytime you're eating a food, a meat product that has not been cooked, I like to think that restaurants want to maintain their reputation and will make sure that it is safe before they would serve it to you.
So if you find a good, reliable source or restaurant, mm-hmm. as far as providing sushi, then you want to stick with that one?
I think so.
You mentioned before about canned foods, and it may not be as good as the fresh or frozen because of the elevated temperatures used mm-hmm. in the canning process. So that brings us to other means to eliminate the bacteria and other pathogens in the foods, such as gamma radiation. And you see more and more in the grocery store terms such as gamma irradiated foods or genetically engineered foods. And would you comment upon the safety of these class of foods or prepared foods?
The irradiated food is different from the type of radiation that you might think of when you think of radiation to treat disease or radiation from an atomic bomb, for example. Irradiation actually kills the harmful bacteria but leaves the rest of the food intact and harmless. It doesn't carry with it any of the radiation. It's kind of like when you go through an X-ray machine in the airport. You don't walk away being radiated. So it's a form of irradiation that is actually very safe and can improve the safety of the food. So I am totally in favor of irradiated food. When we talk about, what's the other type of processing that you asked about?
The genetically engineered foods, like corn and so forth.
Yes.
I guess the farmers use this to affect the crops, mm-hmm. the quality of the crop, perhaps the, mm-hmm. Maybe the appearance of the vegetable mm-hmm. and so forth.
It's kind of like if you wanted to create a different kind of breed of a fruit or vegetable. If you want to have a watermelon without seeds, you could refer to that as genetically altered. However, I don't think many people think that seedless watermelon is harmful. So the end product is not harmful at all. It's just a matter of crossbreeding certain types of foods so that we have a different product. In fact, in some cases, it may be more desirable. It may have even a higher nutrient content. So I see no problem with that at all.
Okay. But the point is that anything, if you consume something that's been genetically altered, mm-hmm. that doesn't imply it's going to affect your personal genetic
exactly.
structure.
Exactly.
Right. We have a caller, Faith from Tampa. Welcome to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. First, I want to thank you very much for having this very interesting program.
Well, thanks so much.
My question concerns fish.
Okay.
How important is fish in the diet, and is it possible to have too much fish?
Okay. That's a good question. I think fish is a very important part of the diet. It's low in fat. It's a good protein source, and it should be included at least three times a week, especially the fattier fish that contain omega-3 fatty acids. I don't believe that that we can have too much fish unless we're eating, I don't think that it's possible to eat too much fish. I think
it's known to have mercury, significant amounts of mercury.
That's true, but even when we look at our food supply, the mercury scare, I think, has gotten out of hand. The amount of mercury that is actually the type of mercury that can be absorbed into our systems that could cause harm, for the general public, there is no safety concern. There is for pregnant women and small children. Aside from that, I don't believe you can have too much fish. Well, you can have too much of anything, but if we had a reasonable amount, if we had fish daily, I don't think that would be too much. Does that answer your question?
Well, I have one more concern, mm-hmm. same topic. Fish such as swordfish, then.
Mm-hmm.
If I go and I want to buy fish, I should not be concerned or afraid to buy swordfish?
I don't believe there's any concern. How often do you have swordfish?
Not very often because of the mercury that I always hear associated with it.
I wouldn't be concerned. I wouldn't let that keep me away from the swordfish.
And how about trout?
I think trout is just fine.
Okay, so trout and salmon are
They're great.
Now, if you were pregnant, though.
Right. Unless you're pregnant, then you'd need to be a little more concerned, and I would encourage you to talk to your doctor about that.
Can I ask you one more thing concerning the fish?
Sure.
How about canned fish? Is it better to have fresh, or can you get just as much from a can of fish?
Canned
tuna.
Yeah, canned tuna is just fine.
So that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question.
Bye-bye.
All right. Are there certain foods, Kathy, that you would say can boost your immune system?
There are not specific foods that actually boost immune system. There are some foods that have somewhat of an anti-inflammatory effect, like omega-3 fatty acids that are found in fish. But if we're talking about cancer patients who are in therapy, we get this question a lot, what can I do to boost my immune system? The best thing you can do is make sure you're consuming enough calories and enough protein to allow your body to do its job. There are not specific foods that actually boost the immune system.
Mm-hmm. And if you would comment on the intake of salmon, wild salmon versus farm-raised. It's mm-hmm. my understanding that farm-raised, you don't know what you're getting. You don't know if you're really going to get significant amounts of omega-3s because it is not out in the wild where the salmon would consume smaller fish and therefore get significant amounts of omega-3s incorporated into their tissues. Do you concur with that, or
no,
what's your opinion?
The fatty acid content is relatively the same. The difference might be in the mercury content, but again, the amount of mercury that's actually there is still considered a safe amount for the general population.
And PCBs? People talk about PCBs mm-hmm. in the farm-raised fish.
There's no documented health risk, although one could say there's a little bit higher level. Again, there's no documented health risk associated with that.
Okay. Let's see. Does a person need to essentially become a vegetarian to really make an impact on their risk of developing cancer? Okay, are you allowed to have some red meat, or is it any red meat is not good?
Well, the American Institute for Cancer Research, the most recent guidelines are to reduce your red meat to 18 ounces per week or less. That does include pork, and I've been asked often, well, isn't pork the other white meat? And pork is actually considered a red meat. You don't have to be a vegetarian to reduce your risk, but you do need to reduce your intake of red meat if you're eating more than that. We tell people to follow the two-thirds, one-third rule and make two-thirds of your plate plant foods, which include grains, beans, nuts, fruits, and vegetables, and make one-third or less from animal products or fish.
And so probably the best indicator as far as a healthy plate is the amount of color on your plate.
Yes, absolutely. The more color, the more nutrient-rich your foods are. And there is also a new term called a flexitarian,
which we'll come back and talk about in a moment.
Okay.
We're with Kathy Allen. You're listening to Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. Back in a flash.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back for our final segment on nutrition and cancer prevention. I'm Steve Maskin. We're here with Catherine Allen from Moffitt Cancer Center, answering all our questions about nutrition and cancer prevention. We've got multiple callers on. Let's go right to it. Sue from Tampa, you're on the Focus on Female Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi, I just had a quick question. A friend of mine's mother is battling breast cancer, and he recommended something called kombucha. It's an herb or a root that I think is found in drinks. Do you know anything about that?
I don't know specifically about that supplement. I think that's, if she does choose to take that in combination with her conventional therapy, is she getting conventional therapy from a physician?
I think so.
Okay. I would caution people to try that as an alternative source. And thing to remember is any dietary supplement like that that we can buy over the counter is not regulated by the FDA. It's not tested for its effectiveness or its safety before it's put on the market. So it can contain things that could interfere with her treatment. So the best thing to do, and it can also be contaminated with, we've found supplements like that that were contaminated with actual drugs, and it can also have bacterial contamination. So the best thing to do is to take the bottle or the label or the product information to the physician. If the physician doesn't know, oftentimes the pharmacist or the dietitian will be able to find information on that.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And some of these herbal supplements, we don't know where they're coming from. They could be coming from, you know, different country. We don't know what the regulations that are being used. Are there laboratories that actually will take an herbal supplement you're interested in and test it for you for impurities and toxins?
There is an organization that's an independent testing agency called the United States Pharmacopeia, but it's a voluntary testing process by the manufacturer. So they can voluntarily send their product to the USP, and if they have done that, it will have a USP symbol on the label. Personally, I don't know if an individual can send anything to one of these agencies for testing, but another thing to keep in mind is that in contrast to medications, over-the-counter products are not taken off the shelf until they have been shown to cause harm, in which case they're then studied and investigated.
But for us here in West Central Florida, there's no laboratory that one could bring a bottle of tablets to have them evaluated.
Well, actually, you can call the local FDA. There's a local FDA office, and I think they could help with that.
All right. Jennifer, you're in Tampa. You're on the Focus on Female Radio Healthcare Clinic with Steve Maskin. What is your question?
My question is, what would be the best kind of vitamin supplement if you're real into fitness and trying to make sure you eat all the right things, but you don't always get to do that. So,
like a general purpose supplement?
Yeah.
Thank you for that question, Jennifer. I would say that the most important thing is to eat right. Make sure you're getting all of your fruits and vegetables, and even some soy protein would be helpful. And if you wanted to take an over-the-counter vitamin mineral supplement, one that's just a basic, like a one a day for women that contains some calcium and possibly some iron, would probably be your best bet.
This soy protein, does that taste bad?
No, actually there are several products on the market that make soy protein very tasty. Some of those high protein bars that many athletes consume actually have soy protein in them.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. A question that some people may ask is about whether their blood type should have any bearing with the kind of foods that they consume.
There's no scientific evidence that shows that blood type has anything to do with the way we metabolize nutrients or any dietary requirements.
And is milk okay to drink if you're trying to reduce your cancer risk?
Milk is fine, particularly low-fat milk or skim milk. In fact, many women need the additional calcium and vitamin D that is found in milk products. There have been studies recently showing that women who have breast cancer actually have lower levels of vitamin D. So I would encourage anyone who's taking a vitamin or a calcium supplement to make sure that there is vitamin D, as long as it's less than 2,000 IUs per day.
And if a person wanted to get their vitamin D from just being outdoors, what's the minimum amount of time they would need?
That depends on the age of the individual, actually. As we get older, we convert the precursor to vitamin D to vitamin D slower. So probably it's a good idea for women post-menopause to take a calcium supplement that contains vitamin D.
And not worry about getting it from the sun, having the sun go ahead and generate that conversion in the skin.
No, in fact, I think there's probably more harm in spending more time in the sun because of the potential for skin cancer.
And if do you know if wearing sunscreen out in the sun, when you're out in the sun wearing sunscreen, affects the ability of the sun to generate vitamin D?
We believe that it can have some impact on that, and it's better for individuals to stay out of the sun as much as possible. Even with sunscreen, there is still a risk of having of getting skin cancer.
Kathy, we have 30 seconds, and in 30 seconds, can you describe one of the problems with doing nutrition studies?
That it's very difficult to actually, when we do diet histories or food journals, we're relying on memory as well as perception. So
that's excellent. We'd like to thank you so much, Kathy Allen from Moffitt Cancer Center, for being this week's guest expert on nutrition and cancer prevention. Next Sunday, we'll be tackling allergy. Our guest expert will be Dr. Dennis Ledford, right here on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. See you next week.